My fellow citizens of Connecticut, I'm Kyone Wolf, candidate for office with the Independent Party for the Independence of Connecticut Independence, or IPICI. We formed this party because of our dissatisfaction with conventional politics. It's our party, and we can do what we want. It's our party, and we can say what we want. It's our party, and we can love who we want. We can kiss who we want. We can see who we want. Red cups and sweaty bodies everywhere. Hands in the air like we don't care, because we came to have so much fun now. Bet somebody here might get some now. If you're not ready to go home, can I get a hell no? Because we're going to go all night till we see the sunlight, all right? To my homegirls here with the big butt, shaking it like we at a strip club. Remember, only God can judge you. Forget the haters, because somebody loves you. And everyone in line in the bathroom, trying to get a line in the bathroom. We all so turned up here. Getting turned up. Yeah, yeah. Wait, stop. Stop the music. I feel like I'm getting a little off message here. Our third party movement is about finding fresh solutions and breaking the hold of leaders with stale ideas. So can I get a little music that reflects that? Trash hang on designer everything, Mr. Como de Garcon, Mr. Alexander Wayne, Mr. Chase. Yes, thank you. That is so much better, because I'm going to be fresh as hell if the Fed's watching. Today on the show, third parties head bopping their way onto the ballots in town elections. And now he's been known to kick it like the captain of a soccer team when he rolls with the South Windsor Citizens Party, Colin McEnroe.
All right, yeah, so this is, I don't know which one of those particular adverbs is true, but in election years, we often do a show called Get to Know Your Fringe Candidates. But we don't do that in municipal years, because I don't think there are fringe candidates in municipal years. I think to a certain degree, because of municipal elections, because local politics are so idiosyncratic, because issues can become burningly important in a way that you could never make them in a state election or a national election, that third parties, fourth parties, minor parties, whatever you want to call them, can become incredibly important, can become effectively major parties in their town. So you're going to hear an example or two of that happening already. But you're also going to hear stories today about a problem that's afflicted 8 or possibly 9, I've heard different counts over the course of this morning, towns in Connecticut, where because of a technicality, because of a change that was made in the law that apparently not enough people knew about, some of these parties which had done kind of everything else right, found themselves not on the ballot and have kind of had to fight their way onto the ballot. We may even have breaking news as the show goes on today. One or two of these parties are in court as we speak. Some of them have already prevailed in court, but others are in court as we speak to see if they can get on the ballot where, by all rights, based on all the other I-dotting and T-crossing, they really do belong. I'll tell you who's here, and then we'll sort of reset. In just a few minutes, you'll hear from John Killian. He's the chairman of the Realistic Balance Party in Middletown, running for mayor of Middletown in this November's election. Stephen DeVoto, also here, a professor of biology at Wesleyan University, who successfully replaced one of the Democrats' 3 endorsed candidates in its primary bid for inclusion in the race from Middletown's Planning and Zoning Board, which is much more exciting than you think it is in the upcoming November elections. We'll also be talking to Valerie Searling Jacobs. She's an attorney who currently teaches writing at Columbia University and helped prepare Save Westport Now in their effort to get their candidate reinstalled on the November ballot. The person for whom all of this is an ongoing concern is Denise Merrill, the Connecticut Secretary of State. She'll be joining us by phone in just a little while as well. We also have, I've invited, and I see one of them already on the board, anybody else who's in a fight right now to either be on the ballot or somehow or other run in a town where they're not backed by one of the two major parties. Anybody who wants to tell their story, yeah, call in 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. But we're going to start with Kyle Dostler. He is the chairman of the Chatham Party in East Hampton. This is an example of what I talked about before. This is an example of a party that's not called Republican and it's not called Democrat. But by certain indices, you'd have to say it's one of the major parties in Chatham. It now plays a major role on the town council and yet has had some problems in this election cycle maintaining its position on the ballot for no reason other than, I, as far as I can tell anyway, this technicality. But Kyle, I'm telling your story instead of you telling your story. First of all, how old is the Chatham Party?
Well, we came about 2005 through issues that were involving a big box and planning and zoning issues.
When we see a big box, we mean like a store. We
like
mean
a Shaw's. Like a Shaw's. Yeah. And we were thought to be a one-issue party, but we were more about the process and the processes to move things along for good governance. And
so what did that mean? In other words, initially the town was facing a big box development, I think kind of maybe wiping out some local businesses too in the process. And so that was your signature issue, as they say. When you say now you stand for good government, or what does that tend to mean? Because obviously, I mean, probably most parties think they stand for good government.
Well, what it tends to mean is as minor parties kind of are defined, whether they like it or not, as one-issue parties. Mm. And we were perceived as that, but what we were really about, we were about the bigger issues in town, and that was about the process and how people were being treated. And since then, you know, we've grown from, you know, the town council. Now we have members on the Board of Finance and the Board of Ed and the P&Z as well, even though that's not an elected board. So we're more than a one-issue party. We're about, you know, just good governance and across the board government.
So you've been on the ballot through a series of election cycles, and at the moment, heading into this November's election, how many seats on the town council does the Chatham Party hold?
Currently, we have majority. So when you're talking about minor parties, we are a major party in East Hampton because we do hold majority on town council presently.
Is that four seats? How many seats is that?
We have four seats. Yeah. There's seven electors. And we currently have four.
Yeah, I've tried to measure memorize all the sizes of town councils around the state, but occasionally I miss one. So, there you are with that. And so you started in 2005. You've been through a series of election cycles. You have more seats on the town council than anybody else, and yet this time around, you suddenly found what, that you weren't on the ballot?
Well, what happened is we filed everything in a timely manner. I got a call 13 days after the deadline, and I was informed that our filings were insufficient. And that was quite the surprise to us, because what we did in 2013, we did in 2011. And basically it was because of five words in Section 9-452 in the state statutes, which, you know, basically kind of removed us from the ballot, though technically we were never removed from the ballot. And to that point, we were in court this morning, and by a judge's order and stipulation through various parties, we are going to remain on the ballot.
Well, congratulations. And that is breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. The Chatham Party is going to stay on the ballot in East Hampton. But in all kidding aside, that is it's serious breaking news and serious good news for you, and probably serious good news for people who believe in the notion of third or fourth or minor parties. We do have people calling in from third or fourth or minor parties, ranging from Jason, who is a New London Board of Ed candidate. I think Mark from the Bottom Line Party in Wyndham is calling in too. So we'll be talking to a lot of people from these parties. I just want to also just talk about this too, just from your point of view, Conal Dostler. You're the chairman of the Chatham Party. I'm assuming the Chatham Party doesn't have a massive war chest for going to court and fighting its way back onto ballots. I mean, how much of a hassle and how much of an imposition is it that you're in court fighting for something that you probably should have had anyway?
Yeah, we certainly don't have a war chest. I guess you could call it a community chest, if that. But, I mean, this is going to be taxing on our fundraising. We had a fundraiser this past weekend, which we did very well at. But nonetheless, we're not raising tens of thousands of dollars. We're in five. We have low numbers for what we raise. But for those numbers that we do raise, we spend them well. But this obviously did hurt us.
What do you do for a fundraiser? It's like a pig roast or sack
No pigs involved. No. We just had an open house at Sears Park and had a day of it.
All right. So we're going to stay. Kyle's with us. We're going to sort of explore together what goes on with some of these parties. It really is wrong to call him a minor party or a minority party, the Chatham Party, obviously, in a much different position in East Hampton. Let's go over to John Killian for a second.
Yes.
He's the chairman of the Realistic Balance Party in Middletown.
Actually, the secretary.
The secretary? Okay.
Yes.
And running for mayor of Middletown. First of all, what's the Realistic Balance Party?
The Realistic Balance Party has been around since 2009. I ran candidate for mayor and maybe a couple other offices. We ran again in 2011. Just like in the case of East Hampton, we submitted basically the same paperwork in 2011 as we did in 2013 with dramatically different results.
Well, before we get to that, I mean, why is there a Realistic Balance Party? What does that mean? What is it?
Well, it started off with a lady who wanted to run for mayor and 2009, and I said, well, you know, if you're going to go out there and get the signatures, why don't we pull it back and We'll put out a slate for a couple of different offices, and then we'll have some, we'll have a ballot, place on the ballot in years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that can enhance your influence. And, you know, the agenda was basically trying to get the city to adopt greener measures.
So why couldn't you do that through, say, I don't know, the Democratic Party?
Well, because it's a big pond and we're little fish, you know. So we needed a smaller pond. It's just the amount of resources you have to play in the major parties are beyond what, you know, I have at my disposal.
Although some people would say, well, no, you're putting yourself in a worse position, because if you can function within the Democratic or Republican parties, then you can tap into their resources and use them to get what you want.
Well, whereas, certainly if I was, like, myopic about getting an office, for instance, you need pretty much need a major party endorsement to do that in Middletown.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not. I'm more interested in influencing, you know, a lot of the politicians out there, being a good friend and a bad enemy. And it's okay, you know, if Steve goes to the planning and zoning, then I can keep my streak of having never gone to a planning and zoning meeting intact. And that's fine with me.
All right. Since you mentioned Steve, let's just swing him into the conversation here. Am I correct in assuming that you're not a member or a participant in the Realistic Balance Party?
I'm a registered Democrat,
yeah,
and on the ballot as a Democrat, part of the Democratic team. I also sought the endorsement of the Realistic Balance Party, and it endorsed me for planning and zoning as well. So
you're cross-endorsed.
I'm cross-endorsed.
And that's like a whole other conversation we're going to be having here today about cross-endorsements, because that can be complicated too. So what was it that you did that makes you different from a standard garden variety Democrat-nominated candidate for town planning and zoning? Or Board of Education or anything else?
Right. Yeah. I sought the nomination as a garden party Democrat through the normal means, which involved an interview with the party leaders. They chose not to endorse me. They endorsed three other candidates. I then, through the state statutes, collected signatures over about 10 days in July, August, to force a primary. So it was a primary petition. The primary election was held on September 10th, and I won that primary. And so I'm one of I'm one of the official Democrats on the ballot in November.
Just in general, I mean, even just kind of almost at the social and emotional and personal level, how's that working out? In other words, you therefore displaced a candidate that the Democratic quote unquote machine in Middletown. I don't know how much of a machine it actually is, but that the Democratic machine wanted. So I don't know. Shun you? Do they give you the cold shoulder about that? Can you all stand up there holding your signs together at big town fairs and picnics?
I've been campaigning with the team, and we're getting along great. So I think everybody who has been through an election, whether it's a primary or a general election, needs to work with members of the other party and with people who were defeated this year but might win next year. So we've been working together and part of the team. I think I do retain a fair amount of independence because of the route in which I came into the nomination.
We should mention also that you've been to how many consecutive planning and zoning meetings?
I've been going to planning and zoning meetings, writing them up to provide transparency for planning and zoning for 5 years. There have been 64 in the last 4 years since the last election. I've been to 50 of those.
That's a lot. That's probably more than many town planning and zoning board members have been to.
That's true.
That's the kind of participation that gets you the Realistic Balance Party cross endorsement.
Yeah, I would think so. So why is that so important to you? Why is planning and zoning so important to you?
I think the two things that the city at any municipality does that have long-term impacts on its residents are education and land use. The decisions we make on land use, whether it's strip malls, businesses, housing developments, those impact the livability of the city for generations to come. And I think it's very important to inject some good long-term planning into the process of land use decisions.
Did you give any thought to running just as a Realistic Balance candidate, or did you just think, I wouldn't have a chance in hell, I've got to fight my way onto that Democratic line?
I did give some thought to it. I chose to fight my way, as you put it, on the Democratic line because I am a Democrat. I'm a committed, blue-blooded, lifelong Democrat, and I felt this is my party. I obviously felt I was qualified.
Do you want us to play the Miley Cyrus song again?
No. It's okay. That's okay. And so I wanted to run as a candidate in the party that, in general, I feel very strongly loyal to.
Kyle, over in East Hampton, why was the Chatham Party formed? Why aren't you guys just some kind of faction within the Republican or Democrat? I don't even know which. If you came out of a particular party, or if it really represents a coloration of what are the two parties, but why is there a Chatham Party instead of just sort of a certain leaning of one of the two major parties?
Well, I think what does make us different is that we do involve Republicans and Democrats and Independents. We don't exclude. We're rather inclusionary, and because of that, I think that very fact makes us very different from the major parties. I think also that we're still around because the people want us there. Like the weatherman, he can predict a hurricane and, no problem if the prediction's wrong. If we predict a hurricane running as Chatham Party Independents, there's no tomorrow for us. Every 2 years, we have to do, what the best is for the town. And if we don't get the support from the community, we're not going to be there for much longer.
Just to sort of explore that analogy a little bit, because I feel as though meteorologist Bob Maxson listens to our show, and he may object to the meteorologist comparison.
Sorry, Bob.
But your point, more to the point, is the Republicans, the Democrats, they can have a bad election cycle. They can just stick it up for 5 election cycles. They're not going away. Whereas you guys really, you have to kind of keep proving it over and over again up until some point. I mean, I assume, if you're 5-20 election cycles or something, you're in. You're there for – you have that kind of inertia. But right now you're saying you got to earn it every time.
Yeah, we still have to earn it every time. It's really every 2 years. And we have no choice but to do that. We don't have a major – we're not a major party. So every time – every 2 years it's a test for us. And if we don't deliver, we could be on the way out.
If any of this resonates with you, particularly if something happened in your town, like we know that there are 8 and I think maybe possibly 9 towns where somebody thought that he or she had gotten onto the ballot and then found out otherwise. It is because of this change. And we'll explain why the change came about in a little while. One of the stories that I've heard about why the change came about is actually amusing. Meanwhile, if anything like this resonates with you, if you have questions too about if you want to even find out from the Realistic Balance Party or the Chatham Party how you go about starting a new party that might actually last in your town, give us a call, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Let's go over to another one of these parties. This is the Bottom Line Party in Wyndham, where they're also facing similar problems. Mark Doyle's joining us. He's a chairman of the Wyndham Bottom Line Party. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
We've established that you were not my cross-country coach in high school, although his name was Mark Doyle, too.
That's true.
first of all, how long has the Bottom Line Party been around?
We've been around for 8 years.
And why is there a Bottom Line Party? I mean, I seem to recall in Willimantic, you also had Green Party candidates for a while, and maybe even Green Party electees. How did the Bottom Line Party come to exist?
The Bottom Line Party came about, oddly enough, myself and Ken Fullen, who created it. We were both officers of the Willimantic Republican Town Committee. And like many Republican Town Committees, the committee became more about the Libertarians and an extremely conservative bent, and we felt we're no longer connected. And we also noticed that the town really wanted a more middle of the road. One of the things that people seem to object to is the Democrats, which is by far the majority in our town. They do a lot through caucus. So they'll caucus behind closed doors, and they'll come to a council meeting with a ready-made proposal that, because they carry the majority, they're able to get passed. So the bottom line became as an alternative to the extremely conservative Republican and not liberal, but at least the party line technique of our Democrats, and we were a middle ground. So we have the first time we ran, in fact, the Green Party candidate in town ran on our ticket, and she won for selectman, and we swept all of the minor seats for the Board of Ed, the Board of Selectmen, and the Board of Finance.
So you're sort of the Jacob Javits wing of the Willimantic Republican Party. I can wrap my mind around that idea. And you guys, did you have the same experience this year? You thought you were going to be on the ballot again, and then you weren't?
Correct, yeah. We filed the paperwork the way we've always filed it, which was you list the names, the addresses, and the parties, offices they're going for. It was accepted by the town clerk, and everything was fine. And then suddenly I got this phone call like the other people did that, oh, there was a change and you were supposed to sign the ballot.
Yeah. Let's find out a little bit more about that. I think the person who knows the most about it that we can figure out, besides the actual Secretary of State, who will be joining us in a little while, but Valerie Sealing Jacobs has been working on this as an attorney for Save Westport Now in their effort to get their candidates reinstalled on the November ballot. Spoiler, they did. But Valerie, explain, first of all, explain what happened to all these people. All these people are telling the same story. We used to be able to get on the ballot. It all used to be fine. And then one day it wasn't so fine. What happened?
Okay. Well, first, thank you. And let me just clarify one thing. Although I am an attorney, I was not the attorney of record on this. We actually had Tom Sargent, our counsel, handle it. But I'm happy to speak to it since I do know it, the ins and outs of it. The new requirement was that the signatures actually be on the form. And so, as others have said, we filed our paperwork, as we have done for years and years and years, in fact, for decades. Unlike some of the other minor parties, Save Westport Now has been around for over 30 years.
So 30 years, did you say?
Yes, for over 30 years. So in any event, we filed on August 30th. We thought that our paperwork was correct. The town clerk looked at it, blessed it. Unbeknownst to our town clerk, and unbeknownst to most of the town clerks, apparently, in 2011, the legislature amended the law and added the requirement that the signatures actually had to be on the form. So we wound up going to court to get back on the ballot.
And so we should say that... And you can correct me, Valerie, if I'm wrong about this. My understanding of this is in statewide elections, this is sort of called a nomination form or something like that. In statewide elections, all candidates have to sign these forms to prove that they actually do intend to be nominated to run on that line. And this change in the ballot on municipal elections, this change in the law on municipal elections, for some reason or other, does not affect the Republican and Democratic parties.
That's
in other words,
my understanding as well.
Yeah.
This was a change that only affected the minor parties. And my understanding was that it was adopted, although you seem to have a funny story. I'd like to hear it. But my understanding is that the purpose of the amendment was to prevent anyone from being coerced into a nomination, something that they had not agreed to, for example.
Right. And I do have... Well, I don't know whether it's a funny story or not, but I think it's a funny story, and I'm assuming I can get the Secretary of State to tell it when she's on about sort of how this came about. It may also just be sort of an apocryphal story. Who knows? But anyway, I just want to, as you guys, and you're not the attorney of record, duly noted, but as your group argued this before the court, and you did get the first court decision on it, what argument did you make, and what argument did the court, in fact, embrace?
The court actually listened quite carefully, and Judge Provodador had obviously read all the affidavits, and I think he was swayed by a couple of things. First, that we had not waited to the very last minute. I think that was clear on our papers. We had filed on August 30th. It wasn't due until September 4th. Second, it was an honest mistake that we were unaware of it and that the town clerk was unaware of the requirement. I don't know for a fact, but I think the judge may have been influenced by the fact that there were 8 or 10 other towns that were in the same boat. But the most important thing, and the judge raised this himself, was that it would have frustrated the very purpose of the statute to deny these candidates a place on the ballot. In other words, if the statute was designed to protect the candidates, this would have the actual reverse effect by preventing them from being able to run when they so clearly intended to be on the ballot.
Yeah. So, and I don't. I'm sure we're not sure to this day we have a really exact hard count of how many towns. I'm now hearing 9, but there might even be a 10th one out there somewhere. But we do know that there's in a whole series of towns this happened. And Valerie, in some cases, my understanding is the candidates just sort of they slunk away. They didn't actually fight this thing out. So we're down to I think just some towns where they are. They're fighting this one out. Actually, let's just flip over for a second to the bottom line in Windham, see if they're still there. Mark Doyle, what have you guys done about this? You got knocked off the ballot. Are you in court as well?
We didn't go to court because my town clerk took the leadership role, I think, and she declared that we were going to be maintained on the ballot, that everything was done in good faith, that we did our paperwork like the other party. We did our paperwork a week in advance, and we were never notified of the mistake. I have been in contact with the Secretary of State's office regarding the mayor's nomination in July and wasn't notified of this change, and she claimed, she says she was not notified. So she kept us on the ballot. So I'm in that unique position of not going to court, but then also not having the protection of the court decision. But my town clerk took that leadership role and said, no, she's going to keep us on the ballot.
Interesting. All right. And were there, I'm going to talk to the other people who are here in the room with me too. Kyle, in East Hampton, was there opposition? In other words, if you were in court trying to get back on the ballot, was there somebody there trying to keep you off the ballot? Was it an adversarial proceeding?
It was non-adversarial completely. But by the time it got to court, there was a stipulation for an agreement to keep us on the ballot with the town attorney, our attorney, the Secretary of State, and the AG's office. So by the time it got to court for us, it was I want to say it was a non-issue because it's a very big issue and it remains one. But it was very non-adversarial, and it went through the judge pretty quickly.
And John Killian, in Middletown, what's going on in Middletown right now? Are you going to get back on the ballot? Or what's happening to you?
We have a court date of next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. How are you managing to go to court? I feel like the Realistic Balance Party probably doesn't have a lot of money for it.
We don't. I had to sell my boat trailer to pay for the process.
Did you really have to sell your boat trailer?
I did.
Son of a gun.
And that I cried. And
you had to sell your boat trailer so you could go to court to get on the ballot to run for mayor with the Realistic?
No, I'm on the ballot because I signed the paperwork, yeah. And so is my running mate. Who?
So what are you in court for then?
So
for somebody else
to get the planning and zoning and to get the Steve got
you
Steve
did this,
and Steve. Yeah,
this is like Henry's gift to the Magi or something.
Correct.
Mean, you really did this for the P&Z people, so you could cross endorse Stephen. You did this?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm battling pro se here.
Stephen ought to carry your boat down to the shore for you.
We're
going
to be talking about a boat launch after he gets in.
That's right. You should just ram through the boat launch. I mean, that seems only fair. All right.
Yeah, but as far as adversarial, I wouldn't say. I was actually at an art show yesterday with my defendant, you know, and we get along just fine. It's just a legal matter. And,
yeah.
But, you know, I am.
Is your defendant the town clerk?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm self-represented, so.
You're pro se? You're pro se and you're selling your book? Would somebody like to represent John Killian in court? Call me, 860. You don't want a lawyer?
Yeah, I do want a lawyer.
Okay, 860-275-7266. Or email me, Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at WNPR.org. Let's get John a lawyer. I think that's only reasonable. You don't want to go in there.
Well, on advice of counsel, I'm going to give the
you don't have
the
a counsel.
Corporate counsel. Yeah, I'm just listening to myself here. I would like to give him a little chance to digest today's action and give him, see what he has.
Who? The lawyer? The new lawyer I'm going to get you?
The corporate counsel for the defendant.
You need to have a lawyer. You need a lawyer up right now. People, if you're pro se, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who just dismiss you.
Well, that's just it. I don't want to be taken advantage of.
They do think that you hear voices in your head if you're pro se. All right. So let me take a break here. We're going to talk to the Secretary of the Secretary of State about this. We're going to get John a lawyer. We're going to solve a lot of problems here before this show's over.
Crazy ass. Fringe candidates. Not a chance in hell of getting elected. Fringe candidates. Fringe candidates.
No. That was a good conversation we just had off the air. No, it will not be Saul Goodman. That will not be John Killian's lawyer. We'll get him. Kraniski could represent you, actually. It would sort of make sense, but. Now, I'm going to get you like a Paul Zolin type lawyer. I'm going to get you like somebody who's they're going to be a little bit afraid of. All right. So Paul Zolin is a lawyer and a weightlifter. He's the best built lawyer in Connecticut. All right. So we're going to talk to the Secretary of State right now. Whilst Jason from New London, I'm really sorry I haven't gotten to you yet. We're just trying to cover a whole bunch of towns at once, and it's complicated. So joining us now is the Secretary of State, Denise Merrill. She's a little part of this conversation, but not the whole one. But Denise Merrill, you do know what's happening here. You're aware of the problem that is afflicted 8, 9, 10, we can't really get quite a hard count here, towns where people thought they were on the ballot, and it turned out they weren't. What happened?
Oh, yes, and I'm not only aware of it, but we've been involved in some of these things. But it's a terrible situation, and I think it's important to remember that I don't think anybody wanted this to happen, not the town clerks, not my office, and not the candidates. And so it's what's happened here is that there was a new law passed in 2010, And notices went out about it, but no one kind of internalized it, although I think it is also important to say there's 169 towns, and most of the towns and minor parties did do the paperwork correctly. But it added a provision to the existing law that said not only do you have to give the name of the candidate and exactly as it appears will appear on the ballot and also what office they're running, but it had to have a signature. And so that was the new piece to this, and it was added to an existing statute, and lo and behold, some of the clerks didn't realize it, didn't internalize the memo. We send out a memo every year about all the new laws. There were a lot of changes in 2010. It was probably overlooked, and the candidates apparently didn't notice it or didn't read the statute. And so by the time it got to the clerk's offices to get certified, this is a certificate of nomination, some of them were invalidated.
Now, a lot of candidates, I think, in this position, third-party candidates, fourth-party candidates, minor-party candidates, or in the case of Kyle and his Chatham party in East Hampton, effectively major parties within their town, they're, you know, people who operate a little bit, they're out on the margins of politics, tend to be a little paranoid because they think people are trying to get rid of them. They look at this law and they think, well, this looks like somebody just tried to get rid of us because we're not part of the power structure. Now, is it the case that this law or this change in the law, this amendment to the law, arose from a situation where a candidate was on a ballot who didn't want to be on that ballot?
That's exactly what happened. In fact, not just one, there have been many over time who either claim they didn't know they were endorsed by a certain third party or honestly didn't know they had been endorsed by a third party and go on the ballot without their knowledge. So I think that's how it arose. And, you know, we're trying to go retrace why this legislation came into being. And I'm not in the legislature. All I do is have to enforce the laws as they're passed. But apparently, we think this arose from a situation with Chris Dodd, the senator who in 2010, you may recall, announced publicly that he would not be running for Senate. And at that time, apparently, the Lieberman Party.
That would be Connecticut for Lieberman, CFP.
Connecticut for Lieberman Party then apparently endorsed him without his knowledge. So when the endorsements arrived in our office, someone noticed and said, gee, didn't Chris Dodd say he wasn't going to run? And they found him, called him, and said, did you know that you were endorsed and will be on the ballot? And he said, no, I didn't, and promptly sent us a letter saying, no, I don't want to be on the ballot, and his name was removed. And, you know, that was the end of that, and he was not on the ballot. But then apparently the following year, the Town Clerks Association requested a change in the law so that this would be clarified and that there would be a way to make sure that whoever was being endorsed knew they were being endorsed. And that's how it got in the bill. I really, honestly, I don't speak for the legislature, but I don't think it was there was any nefarious purpose in just having third parties have to make this signature, because basically that's when the situations arise. Normally, if you're a Democrat or a Republican party, you know, you pretty much have your own candidates from your party, and so it doesn't arise in the same way that it does for third parties. I'm not sure if anyone would object if you just made everybody sign the signature. And by the way, in statewide years, when the legislators and governor and constitutional officers are running, they do have to sign a certificate of nomination of some sort. So it's just, it's in my opinion, the whole thing is we're trying to shoehorn a lot of new situations into very old statutes. The election statutes have not been revised for over 100 years, and so I think we're in a new era.
Well, they haven't been overhauled for over 100 years. In other words, they are revised, but they're being revised piecemeal.
Yeah,
this is an example of it.
Yes, exactly. We just keep grafting changes on top of the laws that exist, and no one ever goes back to kind of conform them all. And this may be one of those situations. I don't know. I don't want to speak for the legislature. I wasn't part of that debate, but it's just a thought.
I'm sitting here with John Killian, among other people, who's a candidate for mayor with the Realistic Balance Party. He did sign the form, but other people from his Middletown Realistic Balance Party didn't sign the forms. He actually sold his boat trailer in order to be able to pursue. This is like Queen for a day or something. So
that
did
was
you have
actually
a question?
That actually
not pertaining to the boat trailer. I don't think she can help you out there.
Well, no, it actually does stem from the boat trailer because that's something that came into play. I had to comply with the DMV laws. I filled out a form.
All right.
And, you know, all we need is a form, and we'll be more than happy to comply. I don't object to this law. I understand what you're safeguarding against, and but a form would help us all be on the same page.
Like a form, just a form that everybody
an endorsement
had
for like a published by. No, well, Kyle may have a different feeling.
Madam Secretary, there must be a form that people
there's
have.
Not.
There's. Oh, Kyle is saying there's not. There isn't like one single form, Madam Secretary.
No, and there was not one required by the statute, which is usually in the statute. It's very prescribed exactly what we need to do. In this one, they decided not to have a form, as I understand it, ironically, because they thought that would be too rigid or something.
So
for whatever reason.
The signature could be on like a Wendy's placemat or something? Or, I mean, where does the signature go if there's not a form?
Well, again, if you look at the existing statute didn't require a form either. It did require third parties to come up with the name of the candidate as it appears on the ballot and the office they're running for. So what they did, as I said, they just sort of grafted this piece onto that law, which already didn't require a form. So that means basically you can put it on any piece of paper you want. You can put it on a piece of letterhead or whatever, but it does have to have these elements to it. And that's where we were stuck, and I feel terrible about all this because it's very frustrating. We had no authority to override the statute, and you know, it's just like when people miss deadlines and that sort of thing. We just, and the judges in both cases so far that have been decided have confirmed the fact that we had no way to fix this.
Kyle, did you have a question you wanted to ask, Madam Secretary?
Well basically the there is no form. It's a suggested format. And even the form that I saw online did not require minor party signatures as well. But I think, you know, to say that this is not a new situation for people not to be nominated without their knowing, I know that that's not true even with the major parties. And I think the overall issue with this is that it is both discriminatory in its nature and it's arbitrary in its enforcement because, you know, if we knew that we needed signatures, we certainly would have complied with that requirement.
It does seem that there's a patchwork here. Even in the conversations that I've had today, Madam Secretary, it's like all over the place. In Windham, for example, the town clerk basically unilaterally seems to have decided, okay, this is a screwed up thing. You didn't sign the form, but I don't care. I'll be keeping you on the ballot because you acted in good faith and you're obviously not a screw up. Whereas other people are having to go to court. Other people are just walking away and giving up and dropping off the ballot. That's not what you want. I mean, obviously, Secretary of State has limited authority over municipal elections, but you kind of want all the rules to be in place and be pretty uniform, right?
Absolutely, and the town clerks are the ones that see all these. These things are not even submitted to our office because, you know, you can imagine there'd be hundreds of them all over the state. So this is all performed locally by town clerks. But again, I don't think the town clerks certainly didn't do any of this on purpose, and they don't want to throw people off the ballot for missing what some people could see as a technicality. As it turns out, I think people are beginning to understand there was a reason for the passage of the law, whether you agree with it or not. And I certainly would have no objection if the legislature wanted to make it a uniform requirement for all candidates for all offices and all parties. It would make perfect sense.
Well, I think it's also, you know, because it's sort of arbitrary and it's not uniform, you don't really know that the town clerks don't want to throw somebody off a ballot. I mean, if some guy, you know, backed his boat trailer up over the town clerk's dog, the town clerk might be really happy to throw somebody off the ballot. You don't want the town clerk to have that kind of discretionary power. Power, right?
No, exactly. And that's the problem. This actually, you have to remember, every time you make any decision, whether it would be to reinstate people who people feel were wrongfully kept off or something, or missed a deadline or whatever it is, every time you make a decision like that, somebody else has a cause of action. This actually all came to our attention in Bethel, where one of the major parties realized that the minor party had not done the proper procedure and called our office and complained. So you've got all kinds of people with different interests, and it's, you know, as you know, highly contested in many cases. So our role is just to tell people what the law is. The clerks will need to either enforce it, and then at some point, you know, the clerk in Windham may have created a cause of action for someone else.
Yeah, and let me just tell you about one more thing. This isn't just to give you another thing to have a headache about, even though ultimately this is going to be decided at the town level. But I've got Stephen DeVoto here. Stephen, in the case of Middletown, where they do have, a later October court date to try to figure this whole thing out one last time, there's a problem with absentee ballots. Explain what that is.
Well, the absentee ballots are required to be made available October 4th, last Friday. So Middletown has printed absentee ballots without the realistic balance. Two of the candidates for planning and zoning listed under realistic balance. Stephen Smith is a candidate who was only on the ballot in under the realistic balance line. He's not on the absentee ballots. If the court decides next Tuesday to that he should be on the ballot, there will be two sets of two different kinds of ballots out there, and the court will also have to determine then how it will count those absentee ballots that were turned in that didn't have Stephen Smith's name on it and did not have my name underneath the realistic balance line.
So, I mean, obviously, Madam Secretary, you are, to the best of my knowledge, only in a position to sort of advise and counsel. But looking at Middletown, obviously, that's yet another kind of problem, right?
That's correct. And it's not the first time even this year that that has happened. I think West Haven this year had three different sets of absentee ballots, which certainly caused confusion when we came to a very close election where the mayor lost his seat by three votes. So these things, you know, that the judge will have to decide how to handle the absentee ballot situation. And then again, you know, at some point we may be called in to oversee counting of absentee ballots at the actual election. But that's why I say nobody wanted any of this to happen. This is really a very messy situation. And it all stems from the fact that all the people who knew or should have known, you know, it was a new law, and I really think it was inadvertent, but it does create a bad situation.
One last thing before we break, and then we'll let you go. There was Don Williams, who's the leader of the Senate, did propose a bill last year. I don't think it went anywhere, but his argument was, and at one point Governor Malloy even stepped forward and said that he kind of agreed with this, even though he had benefited enormously from it, but that in situations where there are multiple parties and then one of the parties decides to cross-endorse, and of course in the last gubernatorial election, Governor Malloy was cross-endorsed by the Working Families Party, which meant he was on two different lines of the ballot. The Independent Party has done this a few times recently, I think on behalf of Republican Party candidates as well, that it creates a lot of confusion. I don't know, what's your take on that? I mean, it seems like, based on the conversation we're having right now anyway, a lot of this is going to need a second look in the next legislative session. What's your feeling about the whole cross-endorsement question?
I think it is an open question, and again, it's because we're trying to deal with very new sort of situations where we have far more third parties. It's a very healthy situation, actually. We have, I think, about 100 third parties out there in various stages of development, but and I think that it is a problem because we could come up against a situation where ultimately if someone were cross-endorsed enough times, they could be on the ballot multiple times, and people start using that as a political tool. And you know, and in fact, just this morning I was reading in Stamford, we have a situation where people are realizing that if you get endorsed by the Independent Party, then you can be on the ballot a second time, and if there were another third party, maybe even a third time. So at some stage, my concern is for voter confusion. And so that has to be weighed against the rights of all these various parties and people. And I did weigh in on it last year. I don't want to stop the cross-endorsement process. I think we're pretty open in Connecticut relative to other states with cross-endorsements and allowing people to be on the ballot multiple times. But there will reach a limit, and I do think it needs another look.
You talked about Connecticut for Lieberman in 2010. My recollection was that John Mertens, who wound up running for Senate, he sought the endorsement of, I think, at least four parties. One of them was the Connecticut for Lieberman. I can't remember how many of them he actually got, but he may have been endorsed, at least cross-endorsed, by a total of four parties. Madam Secretary, thank you so much for your time.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to poor Jason from New London, who, in addition to all the other hardships he has to bear, has been on hold for a tremendously long time. Also, our attorney, Valerie Sealing Jacobs, is still with us. All the people in the studio are with us. We're going to get John a lawyer. Things are going to start getting better soon.
I've decided to switch affiliations to the Dependent Party. I'm running, but could you come with me? I can't stand being alone. In fact, can I sleep over? Just for a couple days. I'm going through kind of a hard time right now. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from Greg Dyson from the Intern Party. The part of Bill Curry was played by Tom Marsh. On tomorrow's show, Erica Jong, 40 years after the fear of flying. And now, back to Colin.
All right, we're talking about third parties, minor parties, major parties, parties that where, in fact, there's even maybe a movement in the case of Stephen Novoto within the party to displace one of the endorsed candidates. One thing we haven't really talked about is the real Lone Ranger, the person who's out there without a party, the person who's out there without either a major party or a third party endorsing him. Let's talk to Jason in New London. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So what are you doing down in New London? Explain what you're up to.
Well, I'm the sole petitioning candidate, completely unaffiliated, running for the New London Board of Education. And I'm getting out there at events as much as possible, and I'm trying to get the word out there. I'm on Facebook. A lot of people in the town already know me. You could say, like, movers and shakers, but as for the constituency, I'm trying to get my name out there so that they know to vote for me.
Are you on the ballot?
I am.
Yeah, how did you get on the ballot? What did it take?
It took a petition, and it was only because we have such low voter turnout, actually. It only took 49 signatures, but I got like 112 or something.
All right. That seems like a pretty low threshold. I mean, I don't think you could say you were, you know, unfairly barred from participation if all you had to get was 49 signatures.
Right. Although it was pretty interesting how I would go to Democratic, or I should say, you know, DTC members, Democratic Town Committee members, asking for their signature because I have a relationship established with them where I believe that they would support me, and would say they would shrug their shoulders and say, "I'm sorry, I can't."
No, of course they're not going to do that. They've got nominated candidates. They're not going to support you. You got to get it from somebody else, right? From somebody outside the power structure. That's where your power base is, right? I could have told you that. All right. So just in general, in 30 seconds, I mean, is this a fun process or have you found it an incredibly grinding, grueling process?
Oh, it is exciting. It's my very first time deciding to, you know, give myself the label of politician. And while it's difficult to take that on, I know what I'm doing is very important. I'm incredibly passionate and dedicated to the education system here in New London. I've been to every single board meeting, except for, like, say, Valentine's Day and, like, one other.
I think you're entitled to give up Valentine's Day.
Right.
Yeah, that seems only fair. So it's like you and Stephen Novoto are the ones who are actually going to the meetings as opposed to the people who are actually on these boards. Well, Jason, good luck out there. I'm just going to quickly go back to Valerie Sealing Jacobs for, and this really will have to be 60 seconds, but obviously we need to change the law about the signatures. As you looked at this whole process, is there another law you'd change, another thing you'd do to make electoral law more fair?
I can't think of anything that I would think of immediately, although it does seem to me that the whole process could be overhauled to take into account the minor parties. As you pointed out before, the statutes haven't been revised in 100 years in any major way. And a lot of the boards, et cetera, are set up in a way that only contemplate two parties.
All right. Listen, thanks for your help. I want to thank also Kyle Dostler. He's the chairman of the Chatham Party in East Hampton. John Killian. We need a lawyer for John Killian. By the end of the day, I want to have a lawyer for John Killian. Email me at Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at WNPR.org. Big firepower, scary kind of lawyer, that kind of lawyer. Stephen Novoto, who's a candidate for Middletown Planning and Zoning. Thanks also to Valerie Sealing Jacobs, who helped with the case of Save Westport. Now, Denise Merrill's our Secretary of State. Thanks especially to Betsy Kaplan, who pulled this show together.
Now, you know, fringe candidates seem rude, but what's really rude is not being inclusive. So let's hear what they say and not be elusive. And you know that politicians seduce us with all kinds of messages, but what the truth is. If you want to know, hit the Colin McEnroe Show. Mandate. Fringe candidates. Fringe candidates.
I'm Kyone Wolf, and I finally decided I'm going to run with the You've Got to Fight for Your Right to Party. You've got to fight for your right to party. Well, I guess you don't really have to constitutionally. You're not required or anything, but it sure would be nice if you would.